Hello, witches. This is Kara Kovacs, and this is Business Witch. As a third-generation witch, at least, and a business and life coach for mission-driven entrepreneurs and leaders, I teach you how to make money and magic as liberatory practices. Because when we know, seek, and embrace our full potential, we create a better world for everyone. Here you'll find tools, conversations, spells, and inspiration that take you from waiting to creating so you can build the business and life you're oh so worthy and capable of having. Let's go. Hello, sweet friend. Before we dive into this week's episode content, I wanted to make sure that you had the best and most up-to-date information about how to become a more active participant in this community. My business would not exist without incredible people like you. And so my hope is that all of the information that I put out, whether it's on socials, on the podcast, or my favorite way to stay in touch via my email list, helps you to take the steps that you need to create all the results that you want to create in your business so that we can co-create a better world. You can head to www.karakovacs.com and subscribe to my email list. You'll see a pop-up for a quiz that will give you the next best step for your business, dependent on where you're at and what you most need to focus on right now. And there's also a whole library of free resources, a mini course that'll help you start thinking about your business like a business instead of your own personal existential crisis. And once you're subscribed, you'll get weekly love letters from me that I hope give you exactly what you need to take action in a way that feels mission-driven, value-aligned, and expansive for you. So make sure you're subscribed and stay in touch. I love being connected to you. Hello, witches. We are back with another incredible guest. I've been feeling really excited that we've had so many cool people on the podcast lately. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Amelia Butler, who is the founder and director of Learn Maori Abroad. And I had the pleasure of being introduced to your body of work because I got to see you do a TEDx and you killed it. How are you today?
Oh, thanks so much, Kara and kia ora. Hello, I'm doing well. It's so great to be with you today, Kara, and thanks so much for having me on your wonderful podcast.
Oh, thank you for being here. And I was asking you just a couple of seconds ago before we got on if it was a prayer, but you actually said that it was a way in which you identify and introduce yourself in Maori. So I think it might actually be a really fun place to start if you would share a little bit about Epeha with us.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Amelia. I'm an Indigenous Māori woman. My tribes are Ngāti Wai, Ngā Puhi, and Ngāti Awa. And so as part of our culture, Te Ao Māori, we introduce ourselves by way of something we call a pepeha. So a pepeha is how we as Māori connect to our ancestors, to these elements of nature such as our mountain, our river, body of water, also our ancestral canoes. And so this is how we would introduce ourselves in a Māori cultural context. It's something that I also talked about in my TEDx talk. So excited that you could be there, Kara, and yeah, be a part of that amazing event in December last year. This is my pepeha, and this is a shortened version of it. So I'll be speaking in Te Reo Māori, the Māori language, but I'll also translate it into English as well. Ti hei mauri ora, ko huruiki te maunga, ko punaruku te awa, ko mātātua te waka, ko te uri o hikihiki te hapū, ko Ngāti Wai, ko Ngāpuhi, ko Ngāti Awa, ngā iwi, ko morore kai kaupeka piripi te tupuna, ko mokau o whangaruru te marae, ko Amelia Butler aho. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Right, so I started off by saying Ti hei mauri ora, which is, behold, there is life. It's that breath of life, that first breath that a baby takes, or that first sneeze the baby does when they're first born into the world. And then the first thing I said after that was that my mountain is Huruiki, followed by my river, who is Punaruku. My ancestral canoe is the Mātātua canoe. My sub-tribe is Te Uri o Hikihiki, and my tribes, Ngāti Wai, Ngā Puhi, and Ngāti Awa. My ancestor, who is my great-grandfather, is Morore Kai Kaupeka Piripi, and he was the paramount chief of our tribe, Ngāti Wai. my marae or gathering place is Mōko. And if you are familiar with Aotearoa, New Zealand, it is in the far north. So it's about 3 hours north of Whangārei, which is probably one of the biggest cities in the north. And it's a very small rural community up there near the Moana, near the ocean. And that's where I'm from. That's where my ancestors are from. And lastly, I am Amelia. Therefore, greetings, greetings, greetings to you all.
Oh, greetings to you. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. That entire day, we've had a couple other people who spoke that day on the show. And it's that day was so impactful. I went with two of my best friends who both like cried the entire time, just like looking over. I was sitting in the middle and everyone just like weeping. And like everyone was so good. I think the energy of the day was really kept, even though it was 5 hours or something like that. The whole time I was like very into it and didn't want it to be over. But I was really struck by your talk in particular around connecting to Indigenous practices as a way to promote healing, particularly right now. And, you know, maybe people are listening to this sometime in the future. People might be listening to this 2-3 years from now. But I listened to you speak in December of 2023, and we're recording in January of 2024. And this moment that we are living through, I found your talk to be particularly relevant for. And so I was curious to have you here today to talk about using some of the tools that you have learned from your culture and also connecting people to their own Indigenous cultural ancestry and history and practices for global healing. And I'm curious if you feel compelled to start anywhere based on that kind of broad range.
Yeah, sure, Kara. Thanks. Yes. So definitely within Te Ao Māori, within Māori culture and within all Indigenous cultures, you know, I think the power of Indigenous cultures and Indigenous ways of thinking, it re-indigenizes our mindset and it moves us away from the Western cultural context towards an Indigenous cultural context. So, you know, we're here right now, we're on Turtle Island, we're here in America, and, you know, something that I think at this point in time, everyone recognizes that this Western culture that dominates the world does not work, you know, aside from all the history of oppression and destruction, the way the Western culture works in terms of the elements of the system, such as the patriarchy, capitalism, white supremacy, it does not work. And it was essentially created for a very small, small group of people. But for the vast majority, these systems are not working anymore. And so there's this huge movement right now for us to birth this new earth. You know, we're calling it, some people say, like the age of Aquarius. And I think the exciting thing is that we already have everything we need. Not only do we have it like internally, and it's literally in our DNA from our ancestors, but our ancestors lived in harmony with nature, with the earth, who we call Papa Tuanuku, and the sky, who we call Rangi Nui. And we lived as one in nature and with each other. And so essentially it's a remembering or a reclaiming, or, you know, it's re-indigenization, because if we go back far enough in our genealogy, right, our family history and our whakapapa, which we call, at some point along, if we go back farther enough, some further than others, our ancestors were Indigenous. Our ancestors lived in communion with nature, with the earth, with the cycles. And so I think what we're doing, what's happening now, is we're coming back around to something that, you know, a lot of us have disconnected from. We're now reclaiming our own indigeneity and our Indigenous root. You know, a way to do that and a way that I teach and I share is, of course, through my culture, through the vehicle of Māori culture. And so something to kind of share, just a really small kind of element of how we can change, is through engaging with an Indigenous language. So I spoke about this in my TEDx talk when we say, ask the audience, right? And Kara was in the audience, you know, who is your mountain? Who is your body of water? And who is your gathering place? And I'm sure at that point, people were like, why is she saying who? And that's grammatically incorrect. And people were maybe a bit confused. Then once I explain that in our language, we connect to these elements of nature just as we would a person. And so we see ourselves as one with nature, and we relate to nature just as we would a person. And we can see that in our language. So for example, we would say, ko wai tō maunga, who is your mountain? And I would also use the same words to say, ko wai tō mama, who is your mother? And of course, the only different words in those sentences was maunga, which is mountain, and then mama for mother, but it's the same. And so that really is reflective of our relationship with nature as Māori, and that we're not viewing ourselves in a hierarchy and above nature or supreme to nature, but as connected with and one with nature. And so then even how we interact with nature, we're interacting with nature just as we would a person. And so I think essentially when we can focus on indigeneity and indigenous cultures, we're not only centering our indigenous cultures, but we're also connecting in a way that we all have in our DNA from our own ancestors. And, you know, a part of the journey is also to find out, you know, how did your ancestors connect with nature? For example, one more thing is for us as Māori, when we have a baby, we bury the placenta in the ground, but we specifically bury it where we're from. So like the area of New Zealand where we're from. And so when I had my two kids here in LA, my mother came over and then she took the placenta back and she buried the placenta. And that is connection with the whenua, the earth, the land. And the word for placenta is whenua, as well as the word for land is whenua. And so that's showing that intrinsic connection that we have, that when we're in the womb, we are nurtured by our mother's whenua, the placenta. And then when we're born into the world, we're nurtured by the whenua, the land. And so again, taking us back to the language can also be a very, you know, a window into shifting your mindset from this Western cultural perspective to an Indigenous cultural perspective.
I loved all of that. That is such an interesting framing of, I was looking into your company and your platform of teaching the language as a way to create those connections. I got a French minor in college. It has escaped me since quarantine. I used to practice a lot more, but I remember the thing that I was most struck by in studying another language is that the way in which you start to think, a whole new universe opens up for you. And because in America, we don't have a pretty strong cultural imperative to expand our language skills, I think a lot of people don't receive the opportunity to even recognize that learning how other people just even phrase things differently, or the similarities that you made between, basically it would be in English, it would be the same word. That's a homonym, not a synonym, of like the land and the placenta. They sound the same, but they reference these two different things. That is so cool. And I think it gives a little bit more insight for me into the way in which your company helps people really learn these beautiful things. I want to ask about the origin story and how you started and created Learn Māori Abroad. I also wanted to say, when we did the Pepeha and we talked about this before he came on, I was like, you know, I'm somebody who has jumped back and forth between cities for the last like 10 years of my life. And I was like, oh, you know, my mountain is the one that I hike every day that's behind my house. But like my body of water is the one that I was raised next to, and that it felt like a larger frame of reference for me personally. But then when you were talking about the relationship with the land, every place I've ever lived, I don't think I've ever shared this, but probably to anyone, every place I've ever lived, I have a favorite tree that I name and I go and visit. And I like put my hands on it. And I'm like, I feel emotional. I don't know why. I feel like I'm going to cry. But I like go and visit my favorite tree. And I've always had one, like everywhere I've ever lived. And like that feels more reflective to me maybe than like any other guidepost, because it was like my tree friend in every place I've ever lived. So I just wanted to share that.
Wow. But thanks for sharing that, Kara. That's beautiful. And I know you're laughing also because it's not like a normal thing to say in this like Western cultural context that we live in here in the United States. But like from an Indigenous perspective, that is totally normal in that you would form that relationship with a tree, because again, there's not a difference there between like a tree and then a person. Like you can talk to the trees and they can understand, you know, and, you know, they different elements of nature communicate differently. And so for me and where I'm from, we have spiritual guardians. And so we have, you know, one of my tribes, Ngāti Wai, is people of the water. So we have the stingray, We also have the shark, the albatross. We have the owl as well. And so, and birds for us are like messengers of, you know, the spiritual realm. And so I love that you just really organically and naturally have this strong affinity for trees. And so, and I love that. And I invite you to explore that, because for me, what that tells me is that your ancestors had a connection with trees. And so now it's coming out in you because, you know, like, for example, my grandmother, she was in the generation that were caned and physically punished for speaking the language in the British school system, right? And so what happens a lot of times is if things come out in that generation, because those were different times, but now they can come out. And so I think that's beautiful. And I definitely invite you to like explore that more, because it, to me, it sounds like, I don't know how much you know about your ancestors, but it definitely sounds like there was a strong connection that your ancestors had with trees, with the forest, and with that realm, you know? Like for me, I'm, again, Ngāti Wai, people of the water. So my ancestors had a strong connection with the ocean. And so I think that's really beautiful. And like that would be a very authentic pathway for you to connect back to your indigeneity and your ancestry, and then to build on that connection with our tree friends. Yeah.
My God, I love that. And I also think it's such a great prompt for people who are listening to maybe think about things that they have a natural affinity towards or connection to, just to make it actionable for other people. Yeah. And I also, you know, I'm first generation. My family came here during the communist revolution in Hungary in 1956. And so I'm fortunate to have a lot of stories about what that experience was like. But most of my family passed before I was born. But I've always felt a really strong spiritual connection and am visited very often by particular people where it's like, hey, like, fancy seeing you here on the balcony in the shape of a praying mantis. Nice to see you again. But it just is really nice to be able to share that with somebody who teaches that as a frame of reference and like understands that so deeply, because I don't often have the opportunity to talk about it. So thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And I think, you know, people don't always realize they're naturally gravitating towards something because it's coming out in their, because of their ancestry. Like my 7-year-old, she loves going out to the garden and like making potions and stuff from like flowers and grass. And we just found out like that her great-great-grandmother on her Native American side was a herbalist, you know, and I also have that in my family as well. And I also had a student who was studying like environmental science. And I said to her, oh, that makes sense. You're studying environmental science because you're Māori. You know, and nature is such a big part of our culture. And she was like, oh, I never thought of it like that. So a lot of it is really just reframing and inviting our ancestors to speak to us through these gifts that they've already, and these natural affinities that we have to trees, or some people to animals, just to like, you know, be open to it. Because I think with the Western culture, it boxes a lot of things in for us, like even to think, oh, it's silly to talk to trees. You know, but I think part of our decolonization and re-indigenization process is to then create more space for that. My mom also, she went on a like cruise around the world, and there was always this like fly wherever she went, and she knew already it was like one of her ancestors. So what you said about the praying mantis is exactly what, like, yeah, it's right in line with our culture beliefs. And even as us talking, we can see like, even though we, our ancestors come from different places, like, you already see these similarities, right, across culture.
Yeah, for sure. And something I was thinking about when you were talking at the very beginning about Western cultural context is what people have been calling the last couple of years the epidemic of loneliness, where because of how strong of an emphasis we place on achievement and individualization, people are more separated and more sad about it, even though they don't connect that the origin point of that is so much of what we place a cultural value on. And so much of what this podcast is about is we're always talking about like smashing the patriarchy and like the issues with all of the isms and obias and white supremacy and all of that. But really what has struck me in this conversation was something that connects to all of that, but is also something that we all are experiencing in our everyday life, which is like when I walk out the back door to go talk to Oliver, who is the tree that is around the corner, that every time I take anybody on a hike, I'm always like, this is Oliver. He's my favorite tree. But that we don't, you know, encourage that, or yeah, we don't talk about it openly. We diminish it, and that we feel so isolated in our little boxes in the sky, and how maybe some of the work that you do might offer people who resonate with that experience some ways to feel more connected.
Yeah, I love that. I love how you, I wish I could come and meet, I'll have to come and meet Oliver too next time I'm in LA. But no, absolutely. And, you know, I think there's the Western cultural system, you know, there's a very destructive and oppressive elements about it, but there's such a, it's a high cost as well, because, you know, this idea of loneliness, you know, if in terms of from a cultural context, it didn't really exist. And it's because loneliness, that concept, is existing in a culture that centers people. And so therefore, if you're by yourself and you live by yourself and there's no other people around, you're lonely. And then we feed on the narrative of like, oh, woe is me, I've got no friends, I'm lonely. But if we change that into like an indigenous cultural concept, how could you possibly be lonely when, you know, there's birds flying, you know, Mother Earth, the stars and the moon, you know, some people connect with the moon in a strong way, the oceans, the trees, the insects, like a lot of it is kind of allowing ourselves to go beyond what we've been taught, that like we are the most, people are above nature and we are the most important thing, because there's so much available for us. And so, you know, loneliness is the direct result of living in this Western culture, because it actually doesn't exist. It only exists in the Western culture. It doesn't exist in an indigenous culture, because it couldn't, because we're so connected. That's just with nature. Like as Māori, we believe our ancestors are with us. And so as well as like our ancestors talk to us, and then they also talk to you, and then they'll visit you in your dreams and things. And so, yeah, that idea of loneliness is very, it's interesting, because I know it's everywhere, but it's also with a different framework or different framing, there actually is no loneliness. The other thing is, in terms of like the birds and the animals and the trees, what happened was, you know, all of our ancestors, if we go back further enough, they all had relationships with the trees and the birds and the whales and the dolphins and, you know, all of these elements of nature. But somewhere along the line, we stopped talking. We, as humans, we stopped talking to nature. And maybe that was right when, you know, colonization, the British were like colonizing the world. And so we stopped talking to nature. And so then nature stopped talking to us, just as if you stop talking to a friend, they're going to stop talking to you. And so I think, like, in order to reconnect with nature, it does start with us talking. So whenever I, so like if I see a bird, you know, it's say in New Zealand, I see a bird and I'll always acknowledge the bird. I'll call it by its name, like Kia ora tui. It's one of our native birds. And even here, I was walking and I saw a flock of Canadian geese. And so, and I said, like, I acknowledged them. I said kia ora, but then it also made me realize, I was like, oh no, I don't know how to talk to them in a language that they would understand. And so I ended up enrolling in a Choctaw language class, Choctaw being the indigenous people of the Mississippi area. And that's my kids, that's their Native American side. And then I learned, okay, it's Halito. And so I was so happy the next time I saw all those Canadian geese, I was like, I could talk to them in a language they would understand, which is the indigenous language of, you know, this area. I'm on the lands of the Chickasaw, and then the Choctaw are also in Mississippi. And so I said Halito. And so I think part of our kind of job in a way is to regain that connection. And so I'm sharing all this because I just love that you are really connecting in this way and connecting with the trees this way. And that, because that's where it really starts, just acknowledging nature. Like if you, you know, if you go for walks in the morning and you see the same person and you start to say hello to that person, you start to build a relationship. But since we as humans were the ones, we stopped talking to nature, it's our responsibility to re-engage. Like we have to, it's on us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're making me think of, you know, when I first moved here, one of the first things that I did was look up the stories of the Tonga and the Chumash people coming from, I was living on Lenape land. And we'll put nativeland.ca in the show notes for people so that they can, if they don't already know, look up whose land they're on. But a practice that my friend Uli shared with me that I really love is that when she vacations somewhere, if she's like getting an Airbnb or a hotel or whatever, she also looks up whose land she's on and she donates to their local tribal organization, like a per night fee. I know. So, but I'm curious, you know, I'm thinking of all of these ways in which that's just things that I did because of my personal values, as far as like being somebody who, yes, I'm first gen, but like there are colonizers on my mother's side. For people who are listening, like steps that they can take. And I was inspired to share that based on what you were talking about learning the language of the people native to the Mississippi River area. Like, what are some things that people can do to start this journey, to continue to honor this journey? And this maybe is a good pitch for some of the work that you do as well, how people might engage with that. I'm still a business coach. I'm like, pitch yourself on the podcast.
Oh, Ms. Cara, yeah, well, I guess, yeah, in terms of the work I do, so my business is Learn Māori Abroad. And I actually started it about 5 years ago, really, because I knew there were other people from New Zealand in the same boat as me, living abroad and not being connected to the language or even to the culture. And so, yeah, so, you know, I definitely can't take all the credit, though. I was at the fork in the road that you kind of get to, and I was like, okay, should I do coaching for women of color, or should I teach the Māori language to other New Zealanders living abroad? And then I heard, teach te reo Māori. So teach the Māori language. So my ancestors told me, and again, I know people have different names like spirit or spiritual guardians. So for me as Māori, that would be my ancestors telling me, teach te reo Māori. And so it started there as just language, as a way to reconnect those from Aotearoa, those from New Zealand, you know, to the culture and, you know, while living abroad. So it kind of started off as that. But then as we kind of went along, I noticed like, oh, there's people asking if they can join and they're not from New Zealand. I'm like, sure, everyone is welcome to join our classes, because I do see, as you kind of mentioned earlier, I do see Māori language and culture as a vehicle for others to connect with their own indigeneity. So everyone's welcome to join us and engage with the culture. And so, yeah, then it expanded from the language classes to haka. So I started teaching haka, our traditional Māori war dance, which Cara did see there at the end of my talk. That was kind of a spur of the moment thing. We decided, like, I think it was 2 days ago, the organizer was like, oh, Amelia, you're going to... Anyway, I ended up just going for it. And so the haka, so I started teaching that, and then our other traditional performing arts, and then also cultural classes. Yeah, so now we, you know, I travel for work and I teach workshops all over Turtle Island and really just share the culture as a way for others to connect. Because I think, especially these days, people want to connect with something that's real, authentic, and traditional. Because as we know, like on the internet, social media, there's so many things out there now, especially with the rise of AI, that you don't even know if it's real or fake. And so that is also having people want to connect with something in an authentic way, and something deeply spiritual as well. And so they get that experience from taking our classes online on Zoom or, you know, in person around the country. So yeah, and thanks, Cara. I love what you said about, you know, finding out who the Indigenous people are, where you live, and doing something to acknowledge them. It's interesting for me. I go to different states to teach, and I definitely can feel the presence of the Indigenous peoples a lot stronger in some states than others. And so, yeah, I do similar. I always look for like an Indigenous-owned business or where I can like purchase something to help support the local tribe. So, yeah, that's wonderful. Thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, no, I love that as a practice. And I think it's something that I saw this meme the other day about, you know, one of the current crises that we're facing, that was like people saying, don't you believe that Israel has a right to exist? And the other person was like, do you believe that America has a right to exist? This is my audience. If they vibe with that, otherwise they can unsubscribe. They probably wouldn't have liked anything else I had to say anyway. But yeah, I think as like a white person living in America, I mean, my family came here because they were fleeing from something that was really scary and dangerous. And like most of my family was killed in the Holocaust or are Holocaust survivors. So there's this interesting place where it's like there is a refugee journey that happened for my father's family. And then there's also like, but this is not my land. And I think paying respect and understanding the history and like seeing how you can support businesses or tribal councils or like expand your education and your mind, that in and of itself feels really healing and reconciling some of the more complicated nuances of like, yeah, should I be here? I don't speak Hungarian, so I don't think I should be there because I think it would be much harder because this is the context I've lived in. And I think a lot of people in America, whatever their history is, because most of my friends are not indigenous to this land, have gone on their own journey of reconciling that and learning about that, particularly in the last couple of years with some of the larger political and social movements that we've seen. And a reclamation of like what history and personal story and like how you can respect where you come from and the people that come from where you are is like a really interesting relationship to dive into in this part of the world.
Yeah, it is. America is definitely a very unique place. And there's just a lot of, a lot of different opinions and different things here. But I think that's wonderful. Like, because I think, you know, ultimately it's like, you know, knowing the history and having that respect for each other. And, you know, the Western cultural system, especially capitalism, has this way of, you know, robbing us of our humanity where we're just kind of not even connected with other people. There's just this, the whole, it's all disconnected. And so I think, you know, that's a great way to kind of reconnect. I mean, like for myself, me too, like my mom is Maori and my dad is Pākehā, which is our word for like a white New Zealander. And so his ancestors come from Ireland and Scotland. And so it's interesting being, you know, both like ancestors who were both colonizers and colonized. And so as part of my process, I did have to go through like, you know, a grieving process of colonization and just grieving the impact of colonization, specifically on my grandmother and with the beatings at school, fitting the language and, you know, all the things, taking of the land and almost wiping out the culture. And so I have gone on my own grieving process, grieving the impacts of colonization. And I think that's important for anyone who's, you know, committed to this kind of work to have to kind of come face to face with the kind of part of it. But it's interesting because on the other side with my Irish and Scottish lineage, I'm also feeling the call now to explore that side of my ancestry and actually go over there to Ireland, because a part of my thinking has, I actually met a woman who was from Ireland and we got to talking about how brave these pioneering men and women were. And they got on boats from like Great Britain and they sailed, you know, on this boat for like 3 months across, you know, halfway around the world to then land in New Zealand in Aotearoa. And so there's, you know, just to think like they did that for the hope of a better life for their descendants. And so what I've also found is this like deep compassion for those ancestors and even, you know, the colonizing of Indigenous people and specifically in my case, Māori. It's like a lot of times they were just doing what was done to them in Great Britain. And so it was just, you know, hurt people, and that's all they really knew. And so part of us, our job, and I think it's kind of our generation, Kara, is to break these cycles. And they start by us not coming here to America and like, I'm going to live here and I don't know who the Indigenous people. So not repeating those cycles of colonial violence now in another country.
Yeah, I really appreciate the way that you said that, because people in Ireland were historically oppressed, like they experienced oppression. And on my mother's side, I'm Irish, and that there is the hurt people, like our unraveling of that and breaking those cycles and the age of Aquarius, as you brought up before, I think it's all aptly timed. And I did a podcast episode on New Year's Day of this year with my good friend Colin. And we were talking about how when we get afraid about some of the scary things that we have to deconstruct, that like we were born for this moment. And that's what you said made me think of. It also made me think of, I have two best friends, my two best friends in the whole world. No, it's not hierarchical. No offense to my other friends listening to this episode, but they're my best friends. But we look like siblings. All three of us look like siblings. We have like, we're all tall and we all have fair skin and light eyes. And all of our ancestry is from the same very tiny town in Ireland. And like, I believe very strongly that like we were sent together. And yeah, like nobody has felt more like family to me than them. It's like beyond a friendship thing. And it feels very much like, no, these are my ancestors and like we're doing this thing together again.
Wow, that's amazing. And yes, I think you are connected. You are related, you know? I think that's really cool. And because even I know the Irish, there's a lot of similarities that the Irish have to Māori. And so, yeah, I love that, especially that you all look the same, but I don't think it's a coincidence that you're all like best friends and you all have this strong connection because, yeah, from your ancestry. What, whereabouts in Ireland?
From Cork.
Okay.
Yes. And like tiny little part in the south. And yeah, one of them, he grew up around the corner from me. And then we met the third. And it was a very immediate, like all three of us are like, you're completing a third thing. Like soul recognition. You know, we've all experienced that where you meet someone and you're like, I already know you, like that. Yeah.
Definitely. That's beautiful. And also just to think that your ancestors coordinated that. So you all met and then now you're all like together.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully for people listening, they're thinking of a circumstance in their own life that is reminiscent of that, because it always is very affirming to remember that somebody is looking out for you to have the experiences that you're meant to have. So with all that being said, if people want to stay in touch, they want to follow your work, they'd like to learn Māori, where would you like to direct them?
So you're welcome to reach out by our website. It is www.learnmaoriabroad.com. We're also on social media, just at Learn Māori Abroad. Yeah. And we have, you know, we run language classes maybe every few months. And then I also travel. So if you're in a city and you kind of see I'm going to be there, I'd love to meet you and can come and engage with Māori culture and learn the haka.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your knowledge and all of your beautiful work with us today. I always ask people the same question at the end of this podcast. What's your why? Why do you do what you do?
Well, I think for me, it's because, so as Māori, our whole culture exists on a matrix of whakapapa or family genealogy. And a lot of my work I do for my ancestors, for my tūpuna, because they were not able to speak our language freely. They were not able to share their culture on a platform such as like the TEDx stage. And so a big why for me is for my ancestors, but also it's for my descendants. So I do have two kids, and you know, for all of our descendants coming up, because ultimately they're the leaders of our future. And it's just for the world, because I see that there's so much power in connecting with Indigenous culture that, you know, ultimately I want to kind of, you know, die knowing that I was part of this evolution that is going to happen, which is the breakdown of these Western cultural systems into this new earth. And I want to, you know, do everything I can to usher that in through my way, which is through my Māori culture. I know you are doing exactly the same, Kara, through your mentorship, through your podcasts, you know, through the work you're doing with your community. And I just think it's wonderful. And I think, you know, there are a lot of us doing with the same intention, but it's manifesting differently. But we all, ultimately, we all want the same thing. And that is just to create a better world for everyone.
That was a really good answer. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll link all of the links that Amelia brought up in the show notes so that you can go follow along. And we'll see you witches next time.